Hi, everyone. Judge Andrew Napolitano here for Judging Freedom. Today is Thursday, August 27th, 2026. Max Blumenthal joins us now. Max, a pleasure, my dear friend. Welcome here. Thanks for accommodating my schedule. I have a lot of questions for you on a variety of topics, but I have to ask you about this quotation you attributed to and sent me a clip of, so he said it, Benjamin Netanyahu. What was he talking about when he said the Islamic Republic of Britain?
Well, this was from 2 weeks ago during a trip to the UK on a podcast where Netanyahu was referring to Muslim immigration to Britain and that that Britain would become the Islamic Republic of Britain and that it would have to be handled the same way that Israel has handled the Islamic Republic of Iran, where Israel initiated two unilateral unprovoked wars on Iran. So essentially he was threatening Britain and telling them, if you turn away from your special relationship with Israel, and Britain, I mean, right now is effectively occupied territory. If you look at how they're treating Palestine solidarity groups like Palestine Action. But Netanyahu was nevertheless threatening that if these Muslim immigrants ever get any measure of political control or some figure like Jeremy Corbyn comes to power, Israel will treat you like an enemy and will wage essentially hybrid war. Israel's already waging hybrid warfare on the United States. Netanyahu has referred explicitly to the U.S. as the eighth front in his eight front war. The other seven fronts are on the immediate periphery of Israel. And in his desperate campaign for re-election to hold together the most fascistic government in Israel's fascistic history, he is campaigning not just against the elected mayor of New York, Zohran Mamdani, but he has placed Zohran Mamdani very prominently alongside two of the top figures on Israel's kill list. There is a campaign banner that's being displayed on buildings and billboards across Israel. That's one of Netanyahu's campaign ads. It features Naim Qassem, the successor to Hassan Nasrallah, who Israel killed in Beirut in 2024. Naim Qassem is now the secretary general of Hezbollah, is the at the top of Israel's kill list, alongside Mojtaba Khamenei, the supreme leader of Iran. And Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who is sort of like next down the line, he's a NATO leader, president of Turkey, but he's down the line. And then you have Zohran Mamdani in the middle of this banner, and in Hebrew it reads, they want Netanyahu to lose. But the subtext is, these are our enemies, and one of them is the popularly elected mayor of New York. So Netanyahu, it needs to be seen as more than just a glib, somewhat racist figure who's joking around on podcasts and waging sort of desperate, cynical campaign ads. I think this needs to be taken a lot more seriously, especially if you consider the level of incitement by Israeli-controlled and pro-Israel forces against the mayor of New York and other figures that are rising in American politics who are calling for a reorientation of the special relationship with Israel.
Gee, that would profoundly, under the law, justify Mayor Mamdani directing the New York Police Department either to deny him entrance at JFK or deny him entrance to New York City or arrest him. He's threatening to kill the mayor. If you or I threatened to kill the mayor, we'd be locked up in a heartbeat.
Well, I should mention, I mean, I wasn't planning on saying this, but you just reminded me that the government of Canada has just denied entry to a key ally of Netanyahu named Ari King. I should say he's a key ally of members of Netanyahu's governing coalition. Ari King is an important settlement leader who has been involved in personally, physically evicting and removing Palestinians from their homes in East Jerusalem and planting Jewish settlers in their homes. And he has called for extreme genocidal violence against Palestinians. And he was scheduled to give a talk hosted by the quote-unquote Jewish community in Toronto until his visa was pulled at the last second. These are the figures who will come back into power under Netanyahu.
You mentioned a few minutes ago the British government treatment of Palestine Action. What is Palestine Action, and what has the American State Department had to say about it?
Palestine Action is the most effective Palestine solidarity group in the world. They're effective because they haven't been just marching down the street with picket signs and making appeals to Western politicians who can either be defeated, intimidated, or bought off. They're taking action themselves. And what they've done is they've gone to Elbit Systems factories of the Israeli state-owned weapons company in the UK, broke into these factories and vandalized them. They vandalized the clean room, which makes the factories extremely hard to get back online. And they've occupied the factories for days and days, shutting down production. They have wounded no one. They have killed no one. They aim to harm no one. What they aim to do is shut down these factories, and they've succeeded in shutting down four factories. And then they go to trial. And when they go to trial, Palestine Action almost always succeeds because they go before a jury. And when they have been allowed to provide context on their activism to say, we did this to actually save lives. And what we did, the cost of what we did is outweighed by the cost of the mass slaughter of children in Gaza. They win. The jury sympathizes with them. And so what the British state has been doing is prescribing, they've attempted and succeeded in prescribing them as a terrorist organization in order to subvert the jury system and to basically subvert democracy itself. We've been breaking these stories at the Gray Zone because the British press has been banned from reporting what I'm about to tell you, which is that in the last two or three trials of Palestine Action defendants, the jury has not been allowed to know that if they convicted them for a minor criminal charge like vandalism, they would then be sentenced by the judge as terrorists. The British press was not allowed to report on these trials or on the pretrial proceedings. So they were literally banned by the judge. So it fell to us. And now the Trump administration, which is effectively controlled by Israel, has designated this British nonviolent direct action group as a violent terrorist organization, along with two other groups on extremely, extremely thin grounds. And I'll tell you why I think they're doing this. There are two reasons, to be general. I know we don't have all day. Number one is they're afraid of direct action in the United States because it works and Israel's afraid of it. That's why they have the National Security Policy Memo 7 issued by the Department of Homeland Security declaring that pretty much any form of left-wing direct action is a form of terrorism. And then that gives them the ability to prosecute defendants and sentence them outside the scope of normal legal procedures. The second reason relates to another case, which is very, very interesting and actually shocking and disturbing, in which the U.S. Department of Justice has indicted and is seeking to extradite one of the most prolific funders of Palestine solidarity groups, anti-imperialist media, and aid to Gaza, who is sustaining possibly hundreds of families in the Gaza Strip on the verge of starvation. His name is Fergie Chambers. He is an heir to the fortune of the Cox family in Atlanta. They own, Cox Media. And he is a anti-imperialist, a convert to Islam who has been living in Tunisia. He went on vacation to Ibiza in Spain, and he was captured by police and is now being held in a maximum security prison in Spain. And so in order to compel the Spanish authorities to deport Fergie Chambers, extradite Fergie Chambers to the U.S. for their major show trial, this is like the show trial the Trump administration wants of a radical leftist, they have to prescribe an organization that he has seemingly supported as a terrorist group. So it's retroactive designation of a group as a terrorist organization in order to prosecute an American citizen who has not carried out any, who has not committed any crime that I'm aware of and was running a pretty legitimate foundation.
Wow. I mean, not just heard.
Yeah, just to pan out.
I've not heard of any of this, Max. This is news in the U.S. Not heard of any of it at all. I heard of Rubio declaring them declaring Palestine Action a terrorist group, but I didn't know the background. I didn't know the relationship with Cox Media. Wow.
Can I just add a few quick things to this?
Sure, please.
I think, especially your libertarian viewers will be really interested to know this. One of the other groups that the Trump administration has declared as a terrorist organization is called Atustici Inventati. And it's an Italian group that provides encrypted web services and encrypted communications for activists. And one third party activist had posted material from a quote unquote Antifa group in Portland. Therefore, the Trump administration is attempting to tie this group to direct action activists in Portland in order to declare that they themselves are terrorists. They're somehow linking them to Hamas. But if we look at this a little bit more carefully, what they're simply trying to do is declare that encrypted communications lay the groundwork for outlawing encrypted communications where they can't spy on you. So that's what that's about, along with the Fergie Chambers issue, where my understanding is we actually released the sealed indictment, which upset some people who are like propagandists for Trump, like Laura Loomer. But my understanding is the indictment is going to be unsealed at any minute, which will prove my point that this is all, a lot of this has to do with nailing one man. But they're going full bore against the First Amendment, against the Fourth Amendment, against the Fifth Amendment. And this is the fallout from the failure in Iran, where, as we've seen time after time in American history, when a war has failed or a war has caused enormous social damage, for example, World War I, the King's War, wiping out entire classes of college students, that was followed by the Palmer raids, Earl Palmer shutting down anti-war groups by force. We're seeing that again with the Trump administration, where the war is coming home and they're about to launch a HUAC-style assault on the anti-war movement.
Wow. Let me divert from this for a minute, and then we'll get back to Zionists and the Congress. Unfortunately, there's more on that than we had hoped. What is your take on the director of the Central Intelligence Agency spending 4 hours in the Kremlin this week?
Yeah, I don't have any concrete information, but all I can say very briefly is I don't accept the official story that he's warning the Kremlin against attacking a NATO state, although Russia is being provoked to attack NATO states because of all the attacks being launched by the elves, the little elves in Estonia and the Baltic states, the drone attacks that are going through Estonian airspace, that are attacking Russian infrastructure, attempting to cause an energy crisis in Russia. But that's not what I think this is about. I think this is about the obsession of the Trump administration, which is, as I've said like 400 times already in the last 15 minutes, controlled by Israel. It's about Iran and attempting to pry Russia away from Iran, prevent Russia from providing intelligence to Iran on targeting. I don't know what extent they've done that. Iran has very good intelligence of its own. Prevent Russia from collaborating with Russia on drones and other military issues, and providing Iran with diplomatic support. So I think this is about Iran. That's just my theory, because that's what Trump is obsessed with right now. And he's run into a dead end on the economic blockade of Iran because of the midterms.
Who is Jared Moskowitz, Congressman Jared Moskowitz? And why was he, can't even say in the news, it was below the radar. You pointed it out to me. I didn't see it anywhere else.
Yeah, Jared Moskowitz is one of the biggest Zionist fanatics among the Democrats in Congress. He was a cheerleader for the war on Iran. He is fully aligned with the Israel firsters in the Republican Party on any Israel issue. And at the same time, he's a social progressive. and he's from South Florida. He has been whining about anti-Semitism and calling for speech laws to shut down any criticism of Israel. He is just basically a guaranteed vote for the Likud party in Israel. And following a bizarre secret, semi-secret meeting, I mean, we know the meeting took place, between Hakeem Jeffries, who's been dubbed by the radio show The Breakfast Club as AIPAC Shakur because of the amount of support that AIPAC has given him.
I know Tupac is dead, but that's a funny nickname. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I wonder what Tupac would say about this sort of icon of the Black misleadership class. Hakeem Jeffries is someone who has paraphrased the segregationist governor George Wallace in declaring Israel today, Israel tomorrow, Israel forever in a speech to a pro-Israel group. And this is a Black New York legislator whose father, Leonard Jeffries, was actually a Black radical who would have hated this. He's the Democratic minority leader. So he meets with Jared Kushner, which is bizarre enough because Jared Kushner should be someone that the Democrats are promising to prosecute for insider trading, corruption, warmongering as they move towards impeachment if they capture the Congress. But he has a secret meeting with them. And then following that secret meeting, all these pro-Israel, Israel first Democrats get appointed to key posts on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, starting with Jared Moskowitz. So he's the ranking member of the Middle East and North Africa subcommittee. That means if the Democrats win in the midterms, you know, nothing's going to happen in altering the special relationship with Israel, which is what 91% of Democratic voters want, according to every recent poll. Then you got Jonathan Jackson, but he's the son of Jesse Jackson. He's criticized Netanyahu, but he's also said he will not stop taking money from AIPAC. He's the ranking member on the Oversight and Intelligence Subcommittee on that panel. Then you got Debbie Wasserman Schultz, a complete tool of Israel from South Florida. She's on the Oversight and Intelligence Subcommittee. And then Wesley Bell, also on the he's on the Western Hemisphere Subcommittee. He just got a plum appointment. Who is he? He's the guy that AIPAC paid like $11 or $12 million. Like they ponied up $12 million in a Super Bowl style ad blitz to defeat Cori Bush, not just once, but twice, who was one of the leading critics of aid to Israel in Congress. Wesley Bell is completely controlled by AIPAC. So this is the Democrats. This is what the Democrats have to offer to their base, complete and utter contempt for a base that turned away from Kamala Harris in 2024. And honestly, they deserve to lose for doing this.
Who is Fernando Cerameda and why should we know about him? What is his involvement in, I don't think it's Cuba, I think it's Venezuela.
Well, it's everywhere. It's everywhere in Latin America right now. So now we're kind of, we're seemingly moving from, you know, the Middle East to Latin America. But actually, if you look at all of these recent elections where in the last 2 years, every right-wing pro-U.S. candidate that Trump has backed in Latin America through overt meddling, interference, and straight-up election rigging, every single one has won. And every time they win, Israel comes in. I mean, it's at the point now where Venezuela's government is now welcoming Israel back in. And Nicolas Maduro, who is in a maximum security prison in New York, who's a political prisoner of the United States, along with his wife, they have to watch their son, Nicolasito, go to a synagogue in Caracas and pay homage to, effectively pay homage to Israel. Bizarre scenes. Colombia's new president, completely controlled by Israel. But these are also governments that are now allowing the U.S. to carry out military operations on their soil. They've given up their sovereignty. Bolivia, same thing. Honduras, same thing. And they're handing over a part of Honduras to crypto scammers and pro-Trump billionaires like Mark Andreessen. Behind all of this is someone that almost no Americans have ever heard of who functions as Donald Trump's bagman in Latin America. His name is Fernando Cerameda. We have a piece about him up at our YouTube channel that explains all of this. But to make a long story short, the ex-girlfriend of Fernando Cerimedo in Bolivia, where he was a key advisor to the government and was, you know, handling all of these different operations, his girlfriend was shot 4 times in broad daylight by hitmen. She somehow survived. Her name is Nadia Beller. And she spilled the beans about Cerimedo, that he had not only hired these hitmen to kill her, but that he was running hundreds of millions of dollars in dark money through crypto accounts to basically pay and bribe politicians. He and her helped fabricate stories about opposition politicians and pump them out in media outlets that they were basically launching. They helped keep Javier Milei in Argentina in power. All of these, they were behind all of these elections. And now, this week, Fernando Cerimedo has just been indicted not only for seeking to kill his ex-girlfriend who had all of his secrets, but for drug trafficking. So Trump's bagman in Latin America has been indicted for drug trafficking, while Donald Trump's so-called Department of War, under its DUI hire Pete Hegseth, is now restarted the boat strikes bombing poor fishermen in a pathetic theatrical attempt to seem as though they're actually against drug trafficking, when their main guy is accused of this. This is a huge scandal. U.S. media has barely touched it. So if you're watching this, you're probably hearing about it first. But check out our report at The Gray Zone about Fernando Cerimedo, and stay tuned for more.
Wow. What is the status of Netanyahu's reelection campaign? I mean, the election is 2 months from now, is it not?
Yeah. I mean, we don't know who's going to win. It's like the polls are seesawing. There's a huge portion of the public that is opposed to Netanyahu. And the figure that is being positioned as the alternative to Netanyahu, and you can sort of see the Democratic Party is getting behind him, he's gathering a lot of momentum in the Israeli press. Key figures coming out of the Israeli military and intelligence apparatus, the sort of gatekeepers, are endorsing him. And he is making these sort of quasi-progressive signals that he would even allow Arab legislators or Arab politicians in Israel to be in some form a part of his government. And he would save Israel's image from Itamar Ben-Gvir and Bezalel Smotrich and these fanatics. His name is Gabi Ashkenazi.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me Naftali Bennett.
No, Bennett is a much more right-wing figure who comes out of Likud. Ashkenazi is someone who is more oriented towards the old labor. He lost his nephew in, I believe, Gaza, and he lost another close relative was badly wounded in Lebanon, and he himself was chief of staff of the IDF. This is, you know, the chief of staff of the IDF typically is the most prestigious figure because the most respected institution in Israel that keeps the whole society together and propagandizes the society into supporting genocide is the IDF. And Ashkenazi, he is no progressive figure. He is the architect of the so-called Dahia Doctrine, which was implemented in southern Lebanon and southern Beirut in 2006 when Israel assaulted Lebanon. The idea of the Dahia Doctrine is disproportionate force and terrorism against civilians to kill as many civilians as possible until they turn against the resistance group, in this case Hezbollah, and it's named for the neighborhood Dahia in southern Beirut that Israel totally destroyed. So that's sort of his legacy. And then as chief of staff at the IDF, he oversaw the first major assault on the Gaza Strip, 2008-2009 Operation Cast Lead, which paved the way for the genocide. And I should mention he was also a figure named Gadi Eisenkot, also oversaw the Dahia Doctrine. But, you know, he's been involved in some of the most hideous assaults on Palestinians and the Lebanese in recent history. And he will be no less brutal toward them as Netanyahu was. And in some ways, this makes him more dangerous than Netanyahu, because Netanyahu has lifted the mask on Israel and what Zionism has always been, and presented us with it, the true hideous core of this onion, where when you peel it back, it gets more and more hideous. And Gadi Eisenkot, he aims to restore the sort of shiny exterior of the onion and to present Israel once again as a Jewish and democratic state with the support of a democratic party with key pro-Israel figures occupying these important roles on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, while the genocide continues in Gaza.
Wow. Max, another tour de force taking us around the world with analysis that nobody's going to get anywhere else except from you and your colleagues at Gray Zone. Thank you very much.